of Supervisors, we stand for the Pledge of Allegiance for the moment.
Pledge of Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
If we can keep in our thoughts the firefighters in Arizona who passed away doing their duty, and for the firefighters we have here in Virginia and locally, we keep them in our thoughts and prayers. Thank you. Go ahead and open up the County Administrator's Report, Mr. Nichols.
Dr. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, a few things to cover before we get into the regular agenda. Just a note on the front side, I think I sent you the email about the Baker Conference in November. The conference form, when you blow it up, says the 18th and 12th. The conference is really the 10th and 12th, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. But it has the 8th and 12th, and there's some preliminaries for some folks. But anyway, if you're interested, make sure you let Mary know that so you can get the room reservations in. And Martin Vance and Bruce, just another good event for Fluvanna County. I'm not sure it had quite the same number as last year, but still a really well-run event, lots of good things. And the water and electrical upgrades that the public works put in concert with Parks and Rec and the Chamber really worked out well. Had plenty of pressure on the water, even though there may be, in this case, sometimes four taps off one spigot. But lots of good positive responses from that. And so we're in pretty good line for additional bigger events in the future with the water and electrical services back in that area of the park. The summer reading program we saw last time, it was about 200 and almost 300 people that already met. Well, the library followed up with another 200 and another almost 300 for two events. And there's still more events coming through the summer on the summer reading program. Not like a lot of fun, it's a pretty interesting session. And a good way to get kids interested in reading and keep their attention for the whole time they're there too. But if you get 300 people to show up for a library event, that's pretty good. Really good work. I'd like to thank the public works staff on behalf of the registrars. They really did a lot of work in moving tubs of information and equipment and supplies and paper back and forth around for the recent election in June. And did a lot of work. Saved us some money from paying other folks to do that since they're already on staff, and saved us some of the cost of the election tax because and much of a farewell to Ms. Gail Bruce, who just ended her term as a member of the Social Services Board. Social Services Department did a nice cake and a send out for her last week. The Columbia Grant, although we've heard now that the Community Development Block Grant has not been approved. We did get very favorable information back from the Department of Housing and Community Development. The work group is working on that. We'll resubmit it at the earliest opportunity. And lots of good progressive work is still going on. I'm trying to do some upgrades and improvements to the Columbia area, to the Columbia. And then for those who didn't know, Ridge Road is reopened now. That's if you just go straight up north on 15. The little side road that goes to Lake Monterey, Palmyra Rescue Squad, there's a road that turns right and goes down over the creek. It's been closed for about 6 or 7 months, putting in a new underlayment, new bridge there. And you can see a photo over here. It's actually very nice, nice and wide, easy to get across now. They did a really good job. And the river was really high this morning, and the creek was really high this morning when I went across it to check it. And the new concrete culvert area is with a big square box when they're hanging the water really well. So it should help save that road in the future. So I appreciate both of doing that work on that and getting it done. Just a reminder to everyone that fan mail is a really good way to get information from the county on happenings and events around the county. But when you sign up for fan mail on the website, you also get the Board of Supervisors' agendas, the action reports, and other things, because we use that mail to send out those kinds of things after meetings and in anticipation of events coming up. So please take time to go to the website, the bottom left hand corner of the green box that says fan mail, and it's easy to just put your email address in there, either home or work, or you can sign up twice, you get both places, and a good way to keep the flies of events that are happening in Fluvanna County. And then we still got a variety of things underway that are under review or being worked on, and then today's meeting will close out some of infrastructure costs and library costs, and although we're going to have the library and library board come back in August to do an update on funding for library and library services, because there's some funding problems that we haven't matched, but you'll also then get the early utilities today and then new high school costs. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Questions from the county administrator? I have one that we should get some answers to. Where the status of the economic development?
That's on your August 7th PM agenda. And that one, there's two of them. I left the sheet in my office. I've got three or four things scheduled over the July 17th meeting and the August meetings. The August meeting is a reminder to all of you and to the public here. The August meeting is, we only have one meeting in August, but it's a dual session. So it'll be a 2 p.m. session. A 7 p.m. session.
Okay.
We're going to be public hearings at the time of the public hearings will be the 7 p.m. session. But E911 is 1 minute, so it'll be an afternoon session on.
And typically the E911's update will be on the radio towers, not necessarily.
Yes, for this project.
Big budget. Yeah.
Is there going to be any money left over from that?
Well, you just have to tell us all about it, but it's conceivable, and the sheriff thinks it's conceivable too, but wait, you just have to tell, because we're not far enough along the contracting process to know how much it's.
So it's not a source you could count on.
It definitely is not a source you can count on. I'm slightly optimistic that there might be some. Last out of the 7.1 is left now, I think. But way too soon to rely on that for anything. And if it were, it wouldn't be truly your regular left or something like that. It would be smaller dollars, at least what's expected between what our folks think and the sheriff's office thinks. But again, way too early to determine for sure. And he'll give you that update on the office for you.
Any further questions from the county administrator? Just one quick comment regarding the town of Columbia. I know that the community block development plan has now turned out. I think we were one of 40 applicants and only 9 made it through. But there were strong indications from Richmond that we were very much encouraged to reapply. I don't think that really spoke to the strength of the grant. I think there was a general consensus that the grant was very strong. I think there's a bit of a queue, and so we've got, supposed to apply 2 or 3 times.
It's not unusual not to get approved for that kind of grant on the first one.
Correct, but there's certainly a great deal of interest in something we should certainly pursue. So that was the consensus. I know we'll be having further meetings in terms of tightening up Columbia's ordinances and zoning and comp plan in the future, and reporting on that diligently. So. Very good. So if there are no further questions for the county administrator, we'll go ahead and move to the first round of public comment. Again, please remember to keep your comments under 5 minutes on topic and direct to the board. Any motion to address the board's supervisors? Let's see. One.
Thank you very much. I'm Carol Carr. I live at 26 Out of Bounds Road in Ravana District. I'm not speaking on behalf of the school board, but on behalf of the Flavanna Leadership Development Program to let you know that we have, first of all, a new website, and it is now linked, thanks to Steve Nichols' help, to the fan mail to the county website. Correct, Steve? Thanks. We just opened our online applications, and we're taking applications now until August 15th for our program. With Al Colville and Easton Loving stepping down, a steering committee of about 15 very involved and dedicated people have come together to basically take it into what we consider its next generation. So I would encourage you all to, if you know of anybody that you think would find this useful or that you would like to see become a leader in the county, please pass it on to them. And we also want to thank you as a board for all of your support of our program over the past 10 years. It's been well spent and well appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to address the board? Go ahead and close the first round of public comment. We have no items for public hearing. We go to action matters tab A. FY13 for Ravana County Public Schools supplemental funding request. Scott.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm sure. I believe that every Board of Supervisors member and certainly every school board member is aware of the supplemental funding requirement based on a shortfall from our state funds, and we've kept in close contact with you. The funding shortfall identified from the state, and there are other sources in that make up that shortfall other than ADM, things like, you know, I have my list, hold on. I want Ed's list. Yeah. I just didn't want to do it from memory and leave out. ADM, there was a shortfall of over $200,000, about $207,000 due to ADM. And ADM is a formulaic approach to looking at average daily membership. We had a loss of the numbers 46. That really doesn't mean that 46 warm bodies left our system. But that has an impact in terms of their formula, and I think you're aware of that. We had loss of funds in remedial summer school, close to $75,000. We moved to the VPSA technology money is $180,000. That's moved to fiscal year 14 for a variety of reasons. That is a that's money that doesn't have to that doesn't get spent in 12 months. It's a 15 month appropriation, and we need that for next year. Sales tax was down $12,000. Textbooks was the least amount that was cut, and that was $2,526. Early reading intervention, we lost $15,000. A little bit more than that, and foster care $42,000. And the bottom line is there's a $502,000 projected shortfall. And again, these are projected. We can, I think Barbara even has very, very specific numbers. I don't know if that's on the next slide.
We're about 496 right now. I didn't change the figure.
Right.
So you'll see on the next slide if there's any
change. I don't anticipate that number fluctuating.
Greatly. No.
Initial revenue, but then it would just decrease
the right, and actually today we received notification from the state that we will, through a reimbursement, be reimbursed for advanced placement exams for our children that are considered disadvantaged. So that is to the good, and those, you know, that can be tweaked, you know, for several weeks, and then of course books have to be closed down in mid-August. So quick answer to your question is we expect that deficit to be better. And Mr. I think Nichols or Ms. Harlacher maybe wanted to talk about this piece. And then, of course, I'll answer any questions that you may have.
These are the sources of surplus funds that we would intend to move toward to cover the shortfall. OPEB personnel contingency, personnel bonus, EMS contract services. There is sufficient funding in 14 for all of these things. These are funds that are left over in 13. And then the school itself plans to have a minimum of $50,000 that they have not spent. And then the $79,000 that would have to come out of fund balance, that would be our sort of number that would hopefully shrink so that we wouldn't need to take $79,000 out of fund balance.
And just to be clear, the EMS contract services, clearly that doesn't affect anything for the future. That's simply money we haven't reserved because we haven't got the contract sorted out at that point in time. It's money that's unexpended at that point.
Correct. And there is sufficient in 14, and there's also $30,000 left in the Board of Supervisor contingency for that that we will probably ask to carry forward.
Understood. And your budget is both fiscal 13 about half a year, and the entire year of fiscal 14, the money for the contracts there for fiscal 14, this is money that isn't going to be used because the contract was extended by the budget. I got the last signature from one of the agencies today, and Mrs. Wilson is delivering to UVA and UVA was on. And as soon as their person on board, they've been advertising for someone at least. As soon as they're on board, the contract's got to be. I would expect sometime in the next 2 or 3 weeks we have contracts out the board. I just don't know for sure yet until they get them hired.
Understood. Okay.
So the signing on their part, they're ready to sign, we've already signed all the signatures here and have completed as of this morning.
Okay. Very good. Mrs. Keller, would you like to continue or are we done?
It's a question.
I do have a question. Thank you.
It's okay.
Question from the board. Mr. Weaver.
ADM.
might want to explain just how you ended up with, I guess, 46 students where you were in December and January. You talked about over $200,000. I think that's interesting. And where your projections have been accurate in the past, it didn't work out this year.
The ADM cannot, the average daily membership cannot be equated to actual enrollment. That's the first thing. ADM is a formulaic approach to funding, and so there are lots of things that impact that. And when we call it, Kent Dickey, for example, is our resource at State Department of Ed, and that's a topic of discussion all over Virginia right now because many, many localities have plummeted in their funds based on an ADM formula. So we didn't lose, if we did a warm body count, Mr. Weaver, it didn't really mean that we lost 46 students, like 46 students moved out of Fluvanna. But the number of students, for example, in February, we track this every month anyway. We give a projection to the board and look at the enrollment, and then we have a way to sort of project ADM, but ours is fuzzy at best because it's really a state formula. And not to minimize what the state's doing, but I really believe that there's a formula involved. I know there is, that I can say I don't understand, and many people don't. But I also think that there's some magic dust that they throw on it in the end, and there's your number. I mean, exactly. Because sometimes you'll get an increase, and you're thinking, wow, you know, where did that come from?
Exactly.
And trying to predict that. So we haven't lost 46 students. The formula shows that we are 46 ADM, average daily membership down, which impacted the funding.
Comes out at the same thing. 46. I mean, like about 5,000 per student.
In terms of funding, yes, you're right. In February, in terms of the real numbers, February, March, we were only down from their projections by 10 students. But go ahead,
I just want to make a point. Your explanation determination, I mean, the funds was excellent. I understand. And I want to make that clear. And I have no problem with funding the shortfall at all. But in December, and to your defense, in December you reported this to the school board that there's maybe a shortage. Again, in February, you reported to the school board about the same number. But the school board never came to the board supervisors all the way back when we were talking FY14's budget during this time and informed us that there may be an issue coming up the pike on a state shortfall. And I understand that some school districts have that spare $500,000 type of way to make up for shortfalls. I personally don't believe any department should have $500,000 type of way at all. And this makes the budget seem to be working because I have absolutely no trouble coming back and saying, hey, this is where I'm at, and being specific like you were. And if you had come to us in December, not the school came to us in December or February and said, it's not looking good. And come June, we may need to come to you. Because we're lucky we had this money. I'm actually a little upset we do, because that means there was a little gravy up in our end of the budget, which, believe me, in January, we're
going to
find out why.
I'm sorry.
You know,
gravy?
Yeah, there's a little money.
Just be clear. We're on brand. We're going to criticize the county administrator and the finance director for going in and scrimping and saving over the course of a year.
I'm saying the money was there.
That's gravy.
I said the money was there.
Well, I think that's an unfair criticism.
From a straight financial management point of view, we would clearly want to have built into a $65 million budget about a 1%. And that'd be $650,000. So, in most places, you'll have that. If you want to end up at the end of the year obligated up to 95, 97, 99, up to 99%, and then whatever's left, goes back to something else. In this case, there was some there. I agree. We don't want too big a cushion. We don't try to pack that in. We still do pack it in 14. But unfortunately, in this case, these are things that either didn't get done, didn't get carried forward.
Oh, and some of it's very understandable.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with the school board. They've been going down to last year 69,000 left.
66.
And you talked about 60 some this year.
We think 68.
If they had 1% of their budget, if they had 1% of their budget, they wouldn't be coming back to us.
Most places would have that
that's left over in the line. It's not that you take 500,000 and chunk it somewhere.
Right.
It's that you have stuff left in lines.
Right.
And so you meet the school board is down to the bare minimum. You don't have, you end up with 60.
That little bit of cushion allows the
fire
instructor to sleep at night. So. Yeah. I mean, you're close to being fired because you get below that.
Thank you,
Ms.
Booker.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't done. I'm sure because
it's offensive.
Go ahead, Ms. Hollenbach.
Well, I appreciate when we stick with that as an unkin character, so please bear that in mind when you speak again.
Sorry, go ahead. Speak.
Yeah,
of course, again. Anyway, I would have had no problem myself in February or December. Knowing about that, and perhaps we could have prepared better in where we were taking the money from and making up for it. My only point is that don't be afraid of the future or hesitant in the future to come back to the board. Because your explanation was clear and concise and no argument. I mean, there is no
argument. Right.
There's nothing in question.
Right.
So that was my only point. I didn't mean to say that the county administrator was backing 500,000 in his budget or anybody else. Thankfully, we have it, but in this case, I would like to know more of it. That's all.
Yeah. No, it's, thank you.
I just have a general question. I noticed you said that the ADM is figured by the state, and that's probably not very understandable. Do you have software in this county to help you track attendance? Because I know that there are systems that have software where you can track that attendance.
We're required, yes, we track 10, but that's different. I mean, attendance rates used to impact AYP through the No Child Left Behind would ultimately impact accreditation for a school. So you had to have a certain attendance rate. Attendance rates really don't directly impact funding. ADM, average daily membership, how many children walk in that building or count it. So yes, we have a good, I mean, we use PowerSchool, for example. We have a good way to track it. It's just tracking it's different than putting it into a formula to determine what your funds are going to be. The state can give you updates. But a few things I want to say, but you go ahead and say if you want any other question.
Systems. Because I know one system. I said they have software. So,
I'm not sure that it, because remember the conversation about, you know, the magic pixie dust that we're trying to spray on the ADM whenever they get up. I mean, that's part of the problem. You can have all of your numbers down pat, and they're still looking through the looking glass 2 years ago and saying, this is your projected ADM. I mean, the good news, of course, is that in future years, you know, drive around the county.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
That ADM
yeah.
Will be plus. Mm-hmm. We haven't had the effect of reassessment take on the LCI, so that also plays into it as well.
Right. There's a lot of uncharted territory here. I mean, it really is not only for Flavanna County, but for our schools. The other, and Ed even had a clarifying point, which is really true. The formula, yes, the formula could actually be understood. It's the adjustments to it that are in a formula that we don't. And I'm not speaking in a derogatory way about our state people. But I do believe there's a little office with some fairy dust, and that's how you end up with it. On the flip side of that, and Mr. Hollenbach, I appreciate your comments, there are things that I believe is, not to sound so cliche, but as we actually grow and grow together and work together, there are things to have your hair on fire about and things not to. And here's a good example. 2 years ago, we received notice that we were going to be cut $200,000 in some title funds. You really didn't need to know that because we made adjustments quickly. That happened in October, November. We said, okay, we're not providing this, but we're going to do this differently, and here's how we're going to fund this. That wasn't even a discussion because we had a bit of room. This year, today, right before I got here, Ed doesn't know this yet. I met with our director for special ed out of a particular grant, it's called 611 and 613, because of a federal definition for disproportionality, we're going to have to, what they call, set aside $107,000. Well, for a different role. They're going to say, you take $107,000 and you're going to have to do this with it based on this, 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 this. Well, guess what that impacts? That impacts their personnel budget because there's nowhere else to pull it. Sorry to tell you so publicly, but my point is, I think that there's a healthy balance. I totally agree with you. I don't believe that we should be sitting on $500,000 as we end our school year and go, what can we spend it on? I've never advocated for that. I've never will advocate that for that. But I do believe healthy business practice, and any superintendent will tell you, you should, as you end that last quarter, you should be looking at 1% of your budget. So that you're not having to do these things. And that's good business practice. And we just didn't have it. Waynesboro City's ADM is a great example, too. I talked to Robin Crowder, went down 70. They lost funding based on 70 students at ADM. But they had enough to pull around to meet it. And again, that's not a criticism. It's the reality of understanding the complexities. And I'm appreciative. Appropriating bodies are responsible for that shortfall. That's a good thing, but that's a tough thing. I just think that it can help us as we move forward, even in terms of notification. We have, for example, we lost summer school money. 3 years ago when I got here, I had a letter from the state that there's funding available for ITRTs. I may have used this as an example. And it was a fussy sort of a letter that basically said, Ms. Keller, you have this money for this particular position and you're not using it for that. You're going to lose it. We never lost it. I called them and we slowly got into the place where now we filled those positions, but they never took it from us. So there's a little bit of, well, they might grab this, but they will grab this, but they won't grab this. And that really is the truth. So that's just what I want to say. Thank you.
FY14, if we could possibly, looking at the same scenario in June.
I think we're on much better footing. Much better footing for lots of reasons. I like knowing early. For example, the cut that we just looked at, when I say cut, it's not a cut, it's a shift of focus for those funds. $107,000 is a lot of money, especially when you were planning on using it for staff, because there's salaries. That's two or three people. That has a ripple effect, but we know that early. But to be specific and respond to your question, as we continue to meet with Mr. Nichols and Mr. Kinney, and then who else comes along the way, I think it behooves us to be even a little more specific. You know, my responsibility for that. Ed and I have already talked about a different template for the presentation to the school board, so we keep them updated. In December, January, no one should have had their hair really on fire, because we get those kind of notices, and you go, okay, but here's the ebb and flow. Then in February, you're only down 10 students. So we can get our hair on fire about the wrong things. Another tough piece this year was a good comparison. Last year, as we closed the year, in early May, we received our projections. And, you know, you're watching all along, May, April, sort of mid-April, then May. This year, prior to June 17th, we received notice from the state in February. And that's when we were only 10 students down. And there was nothing in that report that indicated to the scale and to the degree, the cuts in like foster placement and foster care, et cetera. So anyway, if that helps explain it.
Could you not use a lower ADM rather than, you know, cut it down a little bit and then if it's more, that's great. And that way, kind of save it out?
It's... I can tell you that's, I mean, we've discussed that, but you typically, the governor's budget, which really sets, that, you know, 2011 in December sets the stage for the next year. I don't know a school system that doesn't do that. I still think it's better to operate and not play with it a little bit. I just think it's also the reality of lessons learned in a tough economy when they're in uncharted waters as well as we are, and there may be a little more... fuzzy adjustments that no one can really explain. Because I can assure you, we don't hesitate to call and say, what's going on here, and what about this, and how about this, and why this? We did that today with the funds that they asked us to shift, and it's just called 611 and 619.
So you might be able to alert us then maybe a little earlier?
We alert the board, but like I said, that... I don't know that I would have done it differently in December and January if we... Now, I will tell you this. Looking back, if I knew we weren't going to get a report between February and June, I would have told you in December and January. But we expected to get something. Our final ADM report goes in March, March 31st. The first one's in October, and they run the numbers. Second one's in March. And then they give you a window to verify all the data. So we comb through it, make sure. We actually ask people, go to your classroom, count these students. Who do you have enrolled? What about this kid? Kids who may be moved into private placement, et cetera, et cetera. We verify the data. So you have about a four-week window. But you really should know mid-April, May, and we weren't hearing, and we're asking. So, yeah, looking back.
Then, normal. I mean, Richmond typically responds.
Very, 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 very. And I'm not pointing fingers. I'm not laying the burden. You may do that. I'm not. I'm just painting the picture. And then we've, like I said, already thought. Ed and I have talked about there's a way that we can make it stand out more, I guess I would say, because the school board it relies on us to give them that information. You know, they're wonderful, smart, bright people who ask great questions and are advocates for our children, but they're not the directors of finance. So they have to rely on that information. Just lots of good examples everywhere. Lynchburg City is in the same boat. Lots of my Region 5 superintendents, because I sent out an email and I said, how many of you faced an impact? Out of 25, about 15 came back and said, and here's what we're doing about it. We're doing this, this, this. I don't know anyone that's having to, you know, use, I mean, it's everywhere from $50,000 to quite a bit more than us.
Is this sort of statewide?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. And actually, the cover letter that came from Dr. Wright in June, on the June 17th, it was a heads up to give us, the spreadsheet would be coming, and then it was dated June 17th, the actual spreadsheet. And that's still a projection, but that's getting close. Her information relayed that the governor's the budget that was proposed wouldn't take care of some of the increases in costs across the state as well, and that he had assured that there would be funding there. So there was lots of wiggling, for lack of a better, professional term. Probably a lot of wiggling going on around the state. So it's not unique to us. And that's why I reach out to others to say, what are you seeing? And it gives us a chance as superintendents to advocate for what we need as well. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Conversation back to the board, Mr.
Nichols.
Any further comments from the board? No?
I move to approve a transfer of $449,323 to the FY13 Nevada County Public Schools budget, with such funds to be realigned from the following areas. Fiscal year OPAD $100,000, fiscal year 13 personnel contingency, fiscal year 13 bonus contingency, fiscal 13 EMS contract services, fiscal year 13 Central Virginia Regional Jail, and $90,000, I'm sorry, I didn't give the amounts, the bonus. EMS contract services was $80,000, Central Virginia Regional Jail was $90,000, and general fund balance was $79,323.
Sir, second. Second. Motion made by Mrs. Booker, seconded by Mr. Chesser. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Opposed? Chair of the
Town Board, I just thought maybe I'd ask for some discussion.
Well, I apologize. Would you like some discussion?
No, I was just going to comment on the general fund balance. That probably would be lower.
Yes, sir. I was going to, after you voted, I was going to tell you that, as I said in the previous slide, anything higher, you don't see the schools on here. Whatever remains in the school's budget will be applied to the shortfall. That's why this number on the screen, the 449, is $15,000 less than the actual shortfall. Because anything remaining in the school's budget will be applied to that 490 number, 50 which is from the school. That doesn't have to be reappropriated. If that school remainder is $60,000 or $70,000, that would be applied and the amount of fund balance would be decreased. If there's additional revenues that come in, that would come off that fund balance and the fund balance amount would be decreased. That's why it's the bottom item on here. It's the last place we'll draw funds from to cover the shortfall requirement. But you don't know exactly what the final number is until we hit the April 15th. If there's any substantive change to that, you know, $25,000, $50,000, $100,000 change, I will certainly let you know if there's $100,000 change. But I'll let you know what those changes are as you go toward August 15th.
Does that have to be a part of the motion?
That would have been things, because you're going to change it up. Right? Any money that's left over automatically goes in the general fund anyway, so.
Correct.
Better get a higher.
The school
higher
money, than the school money, if there's any money left on the school, there's only two options. It comes back to general fund after this time of year now. It comes back to general fund, or it's applied here. So in either case, it balances out.
Okay. Any further discussion? No. Call the vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0. Move on to tab L, agreements with the Virginia Department of Corrections for Treated Water and Wastewater Treatment Services. Mr. Nichols.
Mr. Chairman, I've got a number of things here for this motion and for the next motion location. I've got the links to the motions and some background information and additional info if you have any questions. In this specific case, we have two draft agreements from the Department of Corrections for Treated Water and for Wastewater. The Treated Water is for 75,000 gallons of treated water. The reason that is the number is because that's what's easily doable with the existing Department of Environmental Quality permit. It's not that that could be changed over time, but that's what's easily doable now with the permit, and that's been confirmed with the state DEQ representatives and DOC. I've met with them personally. The 125,000 gallons, the same way. They have 125,000 gallons of excess capacity of sewer treatment at their plant. In both of these cases, if you authorize the county administrator to sign these documents, it doesn't mean we start building pipes together. What it does is it gives us essentially the wedge to Department of Corrections to exercise these conditions to do so going forward. The documents are written on or after July 1st, 2014. So in this case, this is what one of the draft documents look like. This has already been referred to you by the county attorney. It's just a four-page short document that has all of the appropriate language in it. But essentially what it says is that this is for 75,000 gallons of treated water per day, and the language that would be signed would be July 1st, 2014, on or after July 1st, 2014. In both of these cases, there's no requirement to build the line, there's no requirement to connect. We have to have a reservation for the sewer, depending on which way you go on water and sewer, but we also would like to have access to that water capacity that we've got. And it is the cheapest rates kind of known to mankind, because it's under kind of a state rate. Very, very low. Those are the two agreements that we need to be authorized to signature on that allows us to reserve that capacity both on treated water and on sewer capacity with the Department of Corrections facility on Highway 15.
Sure. And just to be very clear about this, the fiscal implications you have in the board packet says initial funding for design and construction of the Zion Crossroads water systems included. Just to be very clear, we will not be kicking that off, either design or construction, the engineering or any of that until at what point?
Not until you say so. Although you've been off. If I can pull up one additional slide.
Mm-hmm.
This is what you've authorized already. You've authorized 575 towards build out and operating costs for pipeline designed to Crossroads area. In subsequent fiscal years, you've got 3.1 recorded in the CIP, not funded. Right. You've got 975,000 recorded in the CIP, not funded. But there's no plans to start any contract on this until the board is aware of that and allows it, even though it's been approved in the CIP. Because this is really done in anticipation of whatever types of decisions you make on water infrastructure for design across this area.
Where's that $3,100,000 going to be coming from and 975,000? You mentioned earlier in the future CIP. So, I assume that would be a tax increase of some sort.
Could be a tax increase, could be additional fund balance if something else gets the obligations a variety of ways. I just don't know enough to be able to draw the budget for that year.
Doesn't go into effect until July 2014.
Western Line and connect with DOC before the end of July 2014, and even that's way optimistic. I mean, it's just not technically possible. To do go through the review process, the contracting process, and actually start putting pipelines down and connect to them. We don't have to do anything with them until we actually connect. I just don't want to leave it completely open-ended date for them. So we say July 1st, 2014, all that.
So if we approve this, we can... It doesn't commit us to use it.
No.
So it's sort of no-brainer to
correct
or commit to it.
In my opinion, yes.
Just to be clear, I mean, obviously, there's potential to go ahead and do a geo bond for this. Is that correct? General obligation?
No, we wouldn't normally. We would do a revenue bond or something.
You would do a revenue bond?
The recommendation of the financial advisor would be that we would go through the VRA, the Virginia Resources Association, because we would go then on their credit standing. So we wouldn't want to issue bonds on our own credits. So they very well could be general obligation, but they would be issued by the VRA. So we wouldn't actually have to use it. Correct. And it wouldn't be on our credit standing. It would be on theirs, which is AAA, AA. So we'd get a better rate.
On any of these options, if you're going to require additional funds to do that, whether you do it through tax or whether you do it through a bond issuance, it would not require, under our financial guidance device, and the way we can best get the best cost bonds would be through
what's revenue bond interest rates now? A ballpark figure. Now, what are they running?
They're probably between 3 and 4, but that's why we used 5%. I asked her opinion of what to use. And she recommended if we were thinking of next year to use 5%, because right now the municipal bond market is just going crazy, chaos. They don't know. There's some, you know, going up all the time, the rate.
So. I forget the three sides to punch out, in which case you get the same kind of scenario we had in high school.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't recommend you take too long on the course of action just because the cost of money is not going to be cheaper next year than you're after. It doesn't mean you're going to actually put a pipe in the ground tomorrow. It doesn't mean anything can happen for 6 months or 8 months or a year or 2 years, maybe in some cases. But if you're going to, if you have an intention of taking action, I would recommend moving as swiftly as possible to get the lowest cost financing available on any of the options that you may consider.
But one thing that hasn't been discussed are some other sources of revenue. One of them would be things like development properties. What was that? Development properties? It's in the Congress, it's in the CIP, so it would qualify for that. That may be something the developer would be interested in. Also, as you know, we are talking about other things, including service districts and things like that, that would make it much more, I think you use the word attractive, but the other way.
You need that too.
Service districts, you were going to have mandatory hookups and so on. And when you have hookups, you have hookup charges. And so it wouldn't be just $1.50 a gallon, 100 gallons of water. It would also be an appropriate hookup for whatever business there is. And that would be in addition to the problems. So I'm not telling you that it's a free ride, but there are other sources of revenue besides general obligation, bonds, or taxes.
Okay. Any further questions or comments from the board at this point in time? Not without a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Board of Supervisors authorize the County Administrator to enter into agreements with the Virginia Department of Corrections to the Valley County which will provide a maximum daily flow of 25,000 gallons of treated water per day, and to provide up to 125,000 gallons of wastewater treated per day.
Is there a second?
Yes.
Mr. Daly,
that's
75,000.
75,000.
Motion made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mr. Booker. Mr. Nichols, did you have anything to add?
Well,
Mr. Lee?
Yeah, it looks like to me we have
two competing systems here. How are they going to be compatible, or are they going to be compatible?
Okay, two things. Neither one relies on the other, except to the extent that if you do a PPDA agreement with Aqua Virginia, you have to have sewer treatment services, and you cannot go forward with that agreement unless you have some capacity for sewer. This agreement would give single issue up to 125,000 gallons capacity of sewer. If you require additional capacity in the future, we're certainly going to have to be working with them and negotiating with them to increase their pipe capabilities. That means some infrastructure costs potentially, and possibly change their permit to be able to dump effluent in some place once the water has been treated and ready for release. The 125 is just the starting point. To build a water to wastewater treatment plant separately would be in the multi-millions of dollars. So therefore, that's why this is a more attractive alternative. There's a plant that already could conceivably be upgraded at a much different cost than building a plant out by itself. But you can't do, this one you can do by itself, but you can't do the Aqua PPDA
by itself
without having some sewer capacity. This water, there is the potential that you can mix water too. When you talk to DEQ, and there's a possibility you can have water from multiple sources in mix. Yeah, there's a variety of things you have to go through to do that, but you certainly can do that. But in this case, regardless, this one is almost just has to be done. It just doesn't make any sense not to, because we really need to get our foot in the door and reserve that capacity so that whatever decision you go forward, whether you do it now or a little later on, you've got the capacity to bring some water and sewer treatment to an area that you're going to want to do. It is very low cost relative to speed. And while I understand 75,000 gallons is certainly not the be-all and end-all, it's only one of the multiple set of options that we're out there.
But certainly by signing this, we're not committing to any sort of capital outlay for certainly signing.
We've got $575,000 set aside in the fiscal year 14 CIP for water and sewer infrastructure. It was designed based on the cost of building this out, considering the water where we think it's most appropriate.
Our waste treatment plan of 50,000 gallons,
39,000 gallons.
Huh? 39. I understand that we can't enlarge that. Is that true or not?
Stevens can address that in his brief, but maybe we can tell a little bit about now. It's nowhere near the big plant that people are going to talk about.
You cannot expand it without finding some nutrient allocations from somebody.
Nutrient credit?
Yes, sir.
You want to explain that?
No, not really. A number of years ago, as part of the Chesapeake Bay Preservation Program, the DEQ began to adopt nutrient loading limits, and assigning nutrient loading limits to wastewater treatment facilities that are in the Chesapeake Bay watershed. Since we're in the James River watershed, they divided them up into sub-basins, and we're in the Middle James. Basically, the way they set things up, you pretty much had to have the capacity that you wanted to have on which to base your nutrient loading in place by December 31st of 2010. So anybody that didn't build what they wanted before that lost out on the allocations. Now, one of the reasons that the current plan is 39,900 gallons per day is because anything less than 40,000 gallons per day at that point was exempt from the nutrient. You didn't need a nutrient loading.
How much are we using now?
When the school's open, you're using about 18,000 a day.
And how much is food producing?
About half of the flows. The problem is that you, unless you've got somebody that's willing to operate when the schools are closed and closed down, when the schools are open, the schools basically have a 9,000 gallon a day allocation in the plant. And I'll get into that in a little more detail when I show you what's going on.
Do you have any kind of economic development, or are they can use it?
They can use the remaining capacity in the plant, yes, ma'am. Which isn't much. And I'll go over that as well. Expanding it's difficult. Now, another thing, way you can go, if you have good soils, which in a lot of the county we don't, is a subsurface disposal of treated effluent. Now, it's far more expensive than just building a treatment plant and discharging into a surface water, because you're not only building a treatment plant, you're building a method of disposal, which is typically a very large low-pressure drain field.
So we have about 20,000 left in that tank.
Roughly. There's a, well, it gets a little bit complicated because there's a situation where it appears that somebody may have paid a down payment on some capacity reservation at one point in time, but
the county, you
paid the county, yes, sir.
Right. And you've got other developments that have been talked about multiple times, that's actually something we really do need to talk about pretty quickly because that's a question I can read out of
it.
All positive, but we need to revisit that question of knowledge and apply to it. You don't have the 250 down, 275. Actually, 550 set aside from the county, 275 for the county, 275 which is a relative of what we were calling the county, and it was always a shift of later. $912,000 annual payment, which is part of the first 20 years. And
And in addition, substantially in yesterday's advised agreements that they reported to Mr. Penny and I, myself, Mr. Penny from Oxford, Virginia, there are some very significant changes in there that I think are particularly problematic. First and foremost of which is that if you sign this agreement, within 45 days of signing this agreement, you'll have to prepare to make a deposit of 1 year's payment, which is over $900,000. Assuming that you went to public hearing, assuming that you decide to go forward, assuming that you decide to sign the agreement, the agreement will be signed sometime in September or October. That means before the end of this calendar year, you have to pay to make a $900,000 payment. In addition, the costs are not just the $912,000 a year to term estimate. They also have to have a 10% escrow markup on that. So you were talking about $1 million a year over the course of 20 years now. The good part is that deposit of funds and the escrow does apply to the end of the contract, but it's the front loading of it that is difficult in an already difficult financial environment, but that's just the fact of the way that the contract should work. And finally, there are a number of legal issues that have not been resolved, and maybe made more problematic in the iteration of the contracts that came yesterday in the letter from the attorney representing Oxford, Virginia. So essentially, that's my recommendation. I think you really have two ways to go. You either do not proceed further with this application and finish, or you take it to public hearing so that the information and the documentation is available for public review. The board can then answer questions and can ask more questions. But I don't think there's any really middle ground here. We've been through so many iterations of the documents that I think for the only A and B on the four recommendations that I provide you are more reasonable to either proceed no farther or to proceed to public hearing with the anticipation of the potential for a comprehensive agreement.
Yeah, I would like to hear from Mr. Payne on what the legal ramifications are that we seem to have to look at twice or maybe not even approve.
Well, let me say we've covered the introductions, and that is my perception of Virginia in this case has been they've been perfectly straightforward, perfectly reasonable, but they are a capitalist for profit organization. God bless them. And what I mean by that is this is not a charitable activity. They are in the business of making money. They designed these agreements. This was my understanding. This is not their idea. This is not their agreement. They wanted to go do this, and they initiated it. They were requested to consider doing this. And that being the case, if I were they, I would certainly take the position. I don't mind doing this, but I'm going to make sure that whatever transaction results is going to be favorable to me. That's certainly what I would do. I'm confident that's their perception, too. So anything you hear from Mr. Nichols or from me that's negative is not intended to be a slam on Dr. Jenkins. It is not. My perception of this was that the proper way to go about this was to have the substantive negotiations come first. And you've heard me say this about other things. And that's the way we went forward. What are they proposed to supply? How are they proposed to supply it? And what are they proposed the cost of it? And of course that's much more complicated than just those three sentences, but once that's done, then the lawyers can go at it and work out and form the agreement. That's the way we proceed. It was entirely clear to me, and Mr. Chester and Mr. Kenny were at one of these meetings where they said, we want to know what these legal issues are, because there are big, thick legal issues that may be going to affect the viability of this contract. We don't know about that. So we started getting into those. That's the stage we're at now. Basically, what's happened is that they had their proposed terms of the loan I will tell you that I have not read this last iteration of the documents. First of all, it just came in yesterday, but the other thing is I didn't want to spend the time and getting some money to be reviewing something when I had a pretty good idea of what changes were based on Mr. Satterwhite's cover letter. And I will tell you that assuming his cover letter accurately reflects the documents, and I'm confident it does, Mr. Satterwhite's a perfectly straightforward, confident lawyer. Assuming that to be the case, and I do assume it to be the case, I can tell you that if I were called on to approve these documents, the only way I would approve them would be if the board ordered me to do that. I do not consider them to be approvable. I consider them to be, at least in a couple of regards, questionable now. Now, that doesn't mean they're larcenous or anything like that, but they're technicalities of Virginia law that simply are not, in my judgment, properly justified.
Do you believe those technicalities are insurmountable?
Well, I didn't think so. In fact, until yesterday, I assumed that this was pretty well worked out and all done. Mr. Satterwhite's letter is pretty categorical. The way these changes came about was that they had submitted a new draft. I reviewed it and reviewed the new draft of a couple of these agreements, the most important ones, and sent back to them what my issues were as to the legal issues, including the suggested language that changed and these. Package of documents is how Virginia's response to my comments. Mr. Satterwhite's letter is pretty good at work. And that is, as I read it, this is it. And if you recall, Mr. Chester, Mr. Kenny, when we had it last plenary session, their position basically was, this is basically the last word. This is where we are, subject to working out these legal issues. Then we had these back and forth sessions, we've gone, I raised an issue, they respond to it, and as I understand their position now, is this is it, you know, except for typos and minor grammatical changes and whatnot, this is it. He uses things like, we cannot agree to concede, .. on an issue that I think is significant. The other thing is that, with the exception of one thing on which I am absolutely firm, I don't think we have the authority to agree with what they're talking about. And there are two particular things on this. One is the issue of the applicability of the constitutional debt clause, and they appear to think that we're not subject to debt, this agreement is not subject to the debt clause. I'm firmly of the opinion that it is subject to the debt clause. They simply, as they say, cannot agree to concede that it does, and therefore they've gone with other things. When I say that the legal issues are affected, substantive issues, one of the things that I think has happened here is that Virginia's parent is not a Virginia organization, and a lot of their people are not Virginia people, including their lawyers, other than Mr. Satterwhite. Mr. Satterwhite is perfectly well acquainted with Virginia law, but the other lawyers are not. And I think they have had trouble adapting some of these human and Virginia legal provisions. One of the things they're looking at is, well, look, this is found to violate the debt clause, or the debt clause is applicable, but the county can walk away from this by not making the annual appropriations, which is one of the ways to save a long-term contract from the debt clause restrictions. And therefore, we're going to have to assume that it might happen, we're going to have to protect ourselves. Again, that's not an unreasonable consideration for them. But on the other hand, it does affect typical negotiation, arm's length negotiation, you're out to make the best deal you can for you, I'm out to make the best deal we can for me. And if we can't come to an agreement to satisfy both of us, we simply can't agree. And I think that you're close to being in that position. But there are at least two of these provisions that I consider to be non-negotiable. And they're non-negotiable not because I think I don't think it's a good idea or something, but because I think it's barred by the Virginia Constitution. The third one is one that is not barred by the Virginia Constitution, but I will absolutely not agree to it unless I'm ordered to by the board. And that is, they clearly, we are insisting, as we do in every contract that we can, insist that any dispute resolution be in this court. And they are expressly, they're doing what I knew they were doing before, but they didn't say they were doing it. Now they're saying they're doing it. And that is, they're reserving the right to litigate this in federal court. And I will not agree to that. That's what the board wants me to do. So, in short, if this document, these documents are the last word, and they are, as Mr. Sadway has outlined in the general lead case, I would not approve these unless the board ordered me to do so.
Obviously, the course of the public hearing, the whole point of the public hearing is to be able to amend that document, so we amended it so we can sue the government. Is that sufficient?
Well, the problem with it is that this is what's been proposed. Mm-hmm. We would have to go to, if you go to public hearing, you have to go on this basis. And the question is, if you take it to public hearing and you decide whether based on comments from the public or your own thoughts or whatever it might be, that these forms are unacceptable, then it can't go forward. And
I think the changes would be too substantive.
I would consider these changes to be very unacceptable.
You couldn't before because you couldn't sign it.
If you made it, would be in agreement to sign.
You couldn't make substantive changes without going to another public.
Well, no, what I really mean is, that's probably true, but what I really mean is that if you go on this agreement, and, you know, let's say the public thinks it's a great idea, and you go back to them and say, well, we've got to change this because, again, the attorney says it's not lawful or it's not acceptable. And they say, sorry, we've given you our best shot here, dude. And so the public may think it's a great idea, but it's not simply not approved. That's one of the reasons that I've been trying right along to get them to say, give us your bottom line. And as far as I'm concerned, Mr. Satterwhite has given us their bottom line.
But you could go back to the public here. There was a change.
That's not what I mean.
No, I'm not that. I was saying the speed.
You could do that, sure. But that assumes that right. The county comes back and says, the public has approved this subject to these various changes. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so this is what we want to do. Mm-hmm. We take that back to them, and they say, if they say, sure, that sounds fine, take that to another public hearing, I think you could do that. The problem is, I don't anticipate they're going to say that.
But if it's against the law, that's it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what I'm getting at is, if
I understand that other
if you went, he said, we think it's a good, it's an acceptable plan, except for these issues. And so we're going to take it back to public hearing with these issues changed. I think you'd be wasting your time, because I don't think they're going to agree to that. I think they told you what their bottom line is.
Even if there's constitutional issues in the agreement?
I made absolutely clear that at least, again, there may be other issues here, but there are at least three issues here that are constitutional issues. And I have made absolutely clear to them, this is not a matter that the county is unwilling to talk about this, that the county is unable to talk about this. Now, the jurisdictional issue, I have made clear, that is not constitutionally prohibited, but it is unacceptable to me as a matter of practice. And
possible results if you go to a public hearing. One is that you come up with that you find this agreement based on the public's comments and your own thoughts to be acceptable. I will not approve it as a matter of form. You would have to order me to approve it. The second alternative is that you would find it to be unacceptable for whatever reason, including the financial reasons that the staff has set out. And the third one is that you would do what I said, and that is, we're agreeing to this, except these other things have to be changed, then you take that back to public hearing. The problem I have with that is, I don't think we're negotiating anymore. I think the negotiations are done. That's the procedural posture.
Yeah, I think there's quite a few things in this that certainly raises some eyebrows, just some ethical things and all. Naturally, as Mr. Nichols has brought out here, the recent additions of money to 10% and about three other factors. And I guess I wonder about the lake. I do represent the lake also. And I'm wondering how they feel. They're already paying Aqua Virginia for their rates. If we go on this, with the amount of money we're putting into this, say $20 million, they're going to be paying twice. I don't think they'd be very happy, and they have expressed that to me in the past, that they would be paying twice. They'd be paying for the system, whereas they have their own. So that was one thing that certainly concerned me and concerns a lot of the other people. And mandatory hookups. That has always been a point of contention. Eminent domain. I think it says that we're going to give them how many feet?
2,500
feet on each side. That's
from Wave Mountain Shovel to Zion.
Yeah, to me that's enormous.
That's for mandatory hookups.
That's mandatory hookups.
Let me say one thing about that. You're going to have mandatory hookups. Whether you do this with them, whether you do it with DOC, whether you do it with some other source of water, there will have to be mandatory hookups.
My problem with that in my district is from Lake Monticello to DOC, mandatory hookups for if you're within 2,500 feet of that pipeline. That's grandfathered if you have a well or a septic system until it fails, one or the other. So if your well is dry and you're not paying for water now and you never have for the last 200 years and you have a perfectly good septic system, but your well goes dry, then that ends it. Now you've got to pay hookup fees and get on Aqua and pay the $160 a month for the rest of your life for water you never paid for before. I start multiplying that, that's like doubling the property taxes for most of the folks in Palmyra that will be on the water. That's $1,200 a year more they have to pay out for something they were getting for free. And that doesn't include removing that septic tank and sealing off your well. All costs that are going to be on the backs of property. The option right now is if the well goes dry, you get rid of a new one, and all that free water you got over the years, well then you're paying for it for your own, how many by the foot to find your next well. It's been going on for years. It's the way it is. But that's going to affect folks from the lake to DOC. That's a lot of people with a lot of small homes, a lot of big farms, a lot of wells. Along the way, a lot of septic systems along the way. My development falls into that. That's 41 homes that if you're going to sell your house, now you need to inform whoever's buying the home that it's on septic and well water now, but you may be coming up to having to dump out a lot of cash to be hooked up to Aqua down the road. That's a requirement. That's something that you can't hide. So you think it's hard to sell a house now, you add another requirement to it, and it's going to make it very race, or the one that's been fighting for landowner rights all these years. Now you're telling this landowner he doesn't have a right to his well any longer as the coast road. You know, he has to do it. Now the folks on Zion's Cross Road on 250 that have a little home in between a big plot of land that don't want to develop that home. They lived there for a couple hundred years. They got a farm there or something. They don't want to develop it. Well, it's going by them. They got to hook up. And that's not
If you put a water line there, we have to do the same thing whether it's Fondo or not.
Well, that's not a way Ponchello through Palmetto Ridge.
But you're talking about 250. 250 is...
Oh, yeah. I'll not talk about 250.
Basically, Bob, you're starting to go... Where are you coming from, Bob? Are you talking
I'm coming from way Ponchello to Palmetto, through Palmetto District to 250. I'm not going to talk 250 now. To
the
DLC.
The line is going to go... from Lake Monticello, go along the gas pipeline.
That's correct.
Okay. And stop at the prison.
That's correct. That's correct. Let's just talk about the difference.
Not impact Lake Monticello people involved in that.
They're already hooked up. It affects my district, which are not hooked up.
That's correct. No, it would not, because you're running in there. This has nothing to do. This is not the area.
It's within 2,500 feet of Lake of the plant.
Future, and that's where things are going. Maybe we don't like the idea of growing as a community. But the bottom line is we get one chance to do it right at Science and Crossroads. We get one chance for economic development. We either do it right, and we pay for all the things that we say we care about in this community, whether it's taking care of taxpayers and making sure that sales taxes drive taxes down, taking care of our deputies, taking care of our schools, taking care of our public services through the river of money that's flowing along at Science Crossroads, and we don't get even a slight taste of it. Whether or not we're choosing to grow or whether or not we're choosing to stay where we are and continue the acrimony, continue the infighting, continue everything that's plagued us, not just over the last 4 years, it's been plagued us for the last 40 years as a community. Are we going to grow or are we going to stay the way we are? Is the answer yes, we're actually positive about what Flumana can offer for as a community? Are we saying, you know what, we're not interested, we just go ahead and build a wall along Route 15? Yeah, and then guess what? We raise taxes. It comes right out of everybody else's pocketbook. The only way we're going to get out of the fix, Richmond's not coming to the rescue. We're cutting education. They cut $7.5 million over the last 4 years, and nobody cares. Bottom line is Washington's not coming to our rescue. They've already maxed us out to the hill. We're $17 trillion in the hole already. They're not coming to our rescue. There's a river of money flowing on us in 64. The naysayers said time and time again, it's not going to happen. We'll need to drop a Walmart and Lowe's over there. Then they turned around and said, well, that's all they're going to get. Then they started building stuff now. They're already pushing dirt as we're talking right now. We've got three times the space. Shame on us if we can't get it done. Shame on us if we can't get it done. This is the best deal we're going to get. Is it perfect? No. Is it good enough? Absolutely. And we deserve this pipeline, guys. If you believe in Flumana, this is what we're going to do.
Well, let me say another thing. I certainly want to commend this board, county administrator, and staff for the job they've done on this. The length of time that I've been on this board, there has never been an issue that has been studied and looked at, doubled, tripled. It's really done a lot of background information. There's a lot of different ways that this board could have gone, and they've looked at all of them. And a lot of it was, some of it was done in closed session. You're not aware of a lot of the things. It was in closed session, but they have really looked at this. And this is the first time that, and this is the second largest project this county has right now. So we need to move forward whichever way that is. And I want to commend this board for allowing people to do their job and come out with results the way they feel. That hasn't been the case in the past. We wouldn't be where we are today if they had been.
That's true.
You know, I really am the one who's, I can't say it on the volume, but I really have been championing this economic development and championing the opportunity. But I am concerned with the things that are piling up on that side, especially when the lawyer tells us that we've got some legal issues here that make it very difficult to do this, and I surely would not want the lawyer to sign something that isn't right. So, that is, to me, it's a big issue. I think we need to have more discussion. So I would really move to have a public hearing on this. So the public gets to take a good hard look at this subject. It still gives us opportunity to see what else we can do with this contract. But if it doesn't fit us, in the end of that process, then we would have to say,
I think you're right. I mean, this doesn't occur in a vacuum. I mean, it's not just the public that will have the input. I'm sure that ACWA will have a certain degree of input. I think I echo Mr. Payne's comments. I mean, I think the negotiations are over at this point. If there's something we slide back across the table, you know, obviously I don't think that would happen in a vacuum. ACWA will certainly be, you know, taking great interest in exactly what the county slides back across. But I don't think that will occur in a vacuum. But whatever is slid across when we get to the 7th, should the Board of Supervisors choose to vote it up? And obviously it is a public hearing. I think we have five open minds, even though we have five presuppositions of where we think things need to go. You know, that's the whole point of a public hearing, so we can hear the public. I've seen Boards of Supervisors, as Mr. Williams mentioned in the past, that you know, that have made their minds up before they even walked into the room. But I think, you know, at this point in time, it's, you know, I've never heard of a topic that people are so afraid of that we can't talk about it. So I think it's proper to go ahead and move forward to a public hearing as we stand. I do have several concerns about the constitutionality of what our county attorney says, that that's not constitutional, and those need to be fixed. But if we can fix those legal issues and we can analyze the substance of the agreement as it's meant to be analyzed, we get the input from the public, we have that conversation ongoing with Aqua Virginia, because they're a part of this as well. You know, we may not come up with a perfect solution, but I think I'm optimistic we'll come up with a good one for them.
I say, Mr. Kendrick, you can answer it. The $1 million up front, just so I can start absorbing the next week, where would that come from, or where maybe what we find is?
Mr. Nichols already indicated there's a certain amount of money that's already been set aside, regardless of which way you go.
$500K?
The $600,000, yeah, I mean, that's a start.
Anyway. But some's got to go to, we just approved the DOC water.
Right? You'll have to find it in towards the Department of Corrections, because if you go with the Aqua project and actually approve it, that includes sewer pipelines to DOC. We would have to do the DOC services for sewer services, and that's how we would talk.
So if we still have plan, like, $400,000 or $500,000 somewhere.
Well,
and
really worth it in your optics, but yeah.
I was wrong. It's like that. Yeah, one of the things Mr. Kitty has said, which I certainly concur with, the public has a right to have those discussions. To look at this. We should take it to a public hearing. Because I'm going to approve it to go to a public hearing certainly doesn't mean that I'm going to approve it, but I think his point is right. Air it out, do it right, we've done the background work, and let's get everybody involved in the second biggest project. And I think we've been negligent in the past over this. So I think we should at least take the public hearing and hear what everybody says.
Okay. Go ahead. Well, I was one of those suicides that came on the floor and said, well, I made up my mind 5 years ago.
Chairs now.
And then after
You know what you agreed to.
They reserved the high school. I'll meet you outside.
Let me just, for your benefit, for the public study, because this is starting a public hearing, one of the requirements of GBA is then to make all documents, supporting documents, available for review. Let me just show you what is going to be available, probably on Friday. This is the package that will be available for public, including the action documents, which is the things you just approved today. And then there is a sequence of documents from the original PPA last year, through every negotiation, and from staff comments, and staff working papers, and the agreements themselves, up through the ones from yesterday. So that's the third final. And in that same package are the PPA procedures and guidelines, so that we want. This is the package, probably 150 or so documents in their total, that people will have available. But for anyone that goes to look at it, everything is essentially the same sequence. The ones are the bulk water agreements, the twos are the water pipeline agreements, the threes are the service agreements, etc. They're all done the same. So they're going to go through in some kind of logical sequence to figure out what's there. That's the package that will be available for folks. Because lots of folks have asked about it, especially through the requirement about BPA process.
And then we have, after the public hearing, then we have 30 days.
After the public hearing, according to the BPA process, you cannot vote on going forward for at least 30 days.
30 days.
You don't have to do anything after that. You can, again, walk away from it. But you cannot vote on going forward. You can't take a vote to go forward for 30 days after the public hearing.
So okay, can we?
Probably the second September meeting, probably.
Can we have discussion, work session this morning? Can we talk?
Sure.
Can we spend time talking? Okay.
We're in the much longer, although many people are gone right now in progress, that's probably going to keep the recess.
Yeah.
So maybe the first week is September, because you probably couldn't go to a vote until the second meeting of September anyway.
So the first meeting is September, right?
Well, evening work session that night, if you want to choose for the September
meeting. And not just the hour, I mean, we need to be able to address the concerns of the public and make sure we are addressing them.
It won't be the first meeting in September. I think we're going to have to come back and try to find exactly what day will work best. So, Mr. Nichols, if you could coordinate with the five of us and find out exactly.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Bird the cats. Moving on to tab MC. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I was just saying, we could put this off until January, first meeting in
January. Oh, okay. Yeah.
No,
actually,
you can't call it. Bob. And you know where to be? In the same place we are. Tab MC, code compliance officer position. Suspension.
I don't think we should increase it related to $30,000. I certainly could go along to increase some hours here, but I really don't want to make it permanent until we can discuss it, say, in January or in the new budget. And I do think we need some help there. I'm wondering if there's any other staff that could put in some time on this so that we wouldn't have to.
I'll tell you from the county administrator's perspective, and Ms. Fincher can tell you from the experts' perspective. We are, and honestly, I mean this sincerely, I've got an off-site with senior leadership planned on September 3rd, I mean July 30th. One of the reasons we're doing that is because there's not one more tiny project, extra effort that we can take on with the existing staff. We are strapped to the max. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't be more efficient at some things and be able to take on more stuff, but in this case, this is kind of a specialized thing, and we are really, really, really tight.
Well, I guess what concerns me, we have so many people in the department that goes out and inspects the sites, and
that's a lot of extra work in that department to do. When that started going down, it was brought up again, and they said, well, we have a lot of work inspecting the hospital. So now that's over with. You know, it seems to me that there should be some place, someplace along the way.
Can you speak to the building officials?
No, I can't.
I didn't think about having Mr. Lester here, and I guess it's conceivable that when he and his staff are out and about, they can certainly identify something to report back to the code enforcement compliance officer. But that department's always been pretty tight even no matter what we're doing. And with the new TMDL requirements, stormwater requirements, that means that the building extensions department and Mr. Lester's department, including Mr. Black, our ENS coordinator, are going to be pretty busy finalizing regulations and monitoring that as well. On the next slide here, this recommendation is not recommended because I believe you have to go forward with this. That's my recommendation, my personal recommendation, based on if you're going to do this, I would strongly recommend you do a 6-month test, some expanded hour, not do the bottom of option two. Whether you choose to approve this or not today is not the highest importance issue on my list for the summer thinking going on. But I understand the concern Mr. Holbrook's expressed, and certainly this extension staff could use some extra time to do some things. But it is not the highest priority. But if you do approve it, I urge Sean to do just to do it as a 6-month test.
I remember when we talked about this the last time, I asked if the individuals that we were suggesting had they been spoken to, and I was telling them that they were.
Mr. Miller's here today, too.
Yeah, I don't see how we can put stuff together when we have not, we don't know people's jobs thoroughly, we don't know what issues they have, we don't know whether they don't need to.
Based on our current policy, is it 32 or 30?
30.
30? So once you go
to around 30 or above, you have to consider there are benefits for it. But there are some state requirements. If you go up to 28 and you make it a permanent position, then we have to pay VRS retirement. In other words, 12.5% from the county, 5% from the individual out of their pay.
Anything over 20 affects VRS.
Okay.
If it's a permanent change. If it's a permanent position, if it's a temporary position, it does not affect VRS. Anything for the health benefits is 30 hours or more. That is, you have to look back every 3 months. If it's a temporary position, you look back every 3 months, and if it averages 30 hours, then they qualify for health benefits as of January 2014.
In terms of trying to take a full-time job and cram into a part-time position with benefits. And that's not a bad issue. You have a lot of local doing
yeah, that's not what we're recommending.
I do not want to start that ball rolling here.
But that's not the issue in front of us.
Well, we don't exactly, we're solution looking for a problem right now. I'm not exactly sure what we're going to address. And if the problem is a part-time, can be filled with a myriad hours, okay, that's a different problem. If the problem is something that requires full-time staff, like Mrs. Booker saying, we kind of want to know that.
But it seems to me that at the end of the day, we need to know what we were able to accomplish and what we didn't, what we were not able to accomplish.
That's the commitment on the slide.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, I move to increase the hours of the Fulton County Code of Compliance Office position from 20 to 28 hours per week to December 31st, 2013, at the increased salary cost of $3,376.59.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Chester, seconded by Mr. Allenbrock. Is there any further discussion from the board? Hearing none. I call a question. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes nay. That's 3-2. Booker and Kennedy dissenting. Moving on to your presentations, wastewater treatment plant costs and payments, Mr. Stevens.
Yeah, I think we've changed the order a little bit. I believe we're going to do our buildings first. Is that correct, Steve? I'll do it in whatever order we want to do it in. But.
Mr. Chairman, just an update. Your package, I think, shows wastewater and then utilities and then library. I've changed the order a little bit on the screen because all of the package should answer all the questions. But Mr. Stevens will be covering utilities, wastewater treatment, and maintenance costs.
Okay. This thing work? Wait a minute. Oh, don't push it yet. Very good. All right, I'm going to start by giving you the, this is basically your annual electrical and HV utilities costs. Some of our buildings are all electric as far as their HVAC systems go, and some of them operate on either fuel oil or propane. And so what we've been doing is I've got about 3 good years of data on the electrical costs. I will give a caveat that that is less the month of June of 2013, some of which I haven't received bills yet for. So the overall average for 2013 will go up a little bit. And I've got really, unfortunately, only one really good year of fuel oil and propane use. But as you can see, and Mr. Weaver had specifically asked questions about the library is pretty much, it's a big building, 17,500 square feet, and it is fairly efficient to heat, cool, and operate from an electrical standpoint. The only thing the library lacks right now, I think, is a water supply that's potable. And we'll maybe deal with that as a separate issue sometime soon. I found some surprises as I was going through this because I was surprised at how expensive some of the things are to keep up and running. I was surprised at how inexpensive a couple of the others. The treasurer's office in particular comes in as a surprise to me at how inexpensive. It's an old building, but it is a pretty well-built building. It's well-insulated, and it's right down there as far as the actual operating cost goes with the treasurer's office. Our most expensive buildings are the Performing Arts Center, the Public Safety Building, and the Courts Building.
I'm so disappointed that the library doesn't have a little bit cheaper. with the treasurer's office, I'm amazed that they have that low cost.
Well, we'll get to the repair costs, and then you'll... that's the next slide. That could explain a lot.
We're surprised that too, but they've got that really big attic that's a huge space.
And it actually has insulation in it, unlike some of the older buildings that we have. The public safety building, I'd advise everybody to keep in mind, that is the only building we have that actually stays open, that has people in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Obviously, it's not as fully staffed in the middle of the night, but they don't really have an opportunity to turn their thermostat down in the winter and or up in the summer to try to save some energy, because that is going to be one of your larger expenses. The courts building is an interesting case. It just seems to be plain old expensive to operate, and a lot of high ceilings, and the HVAC system for this building had some. Well, there were some flaws in it to start with, like a lack of vibration dampening for compressors and things like that. But the overall design is very sound. The issue is that it was designed from the standpoint of being very comfortable to be in rather than being efficient. For instance, the boilers actually run all year round in this building. The AC system operates to bring the air down to a minimal temperature and removing virtually all of the humidity, and then to avoid having 50-degree air blowing down out of the vents, based on what the thermostat setting is in a given zone, the boilers then add a little bit of heat back into this air before it comes out into the rooms. I believe it's the only building we have that is designed that way, and that clearly explains or shows up in the how expensive it is to operate. Now,
compare to other counties.
Based on what I've been reading from other public works folks, the range that we're in, you know, the dollar is low. The $1.09, that's a fairly low cost. But the up around the $1.25 to $2 is probably in your average, and then anything, you know, over $2 per square foot per year for electric and HVAC is starting to get a little bit expensive. Now, one of the issues you're going to see now is, and I will apologize because I failed to combine these two spreadsheets in a final great one that gives you the overall total cost before I did these displays. However, I have done one that I can hand out to you. I've got a few extras in case someone in the public might want one. But this gives you, and this is based on only 1 year of HVAC repair costs. You can see we've put quite a bit of money into the social services system, for instance, and very little into the library. The library's been a remarkably reliable system. It's an example of a geothermal system that, in my opinion anyway, was well-designed and well-implemented. Unfortunately, the social services building on the other side of that coin is also a geothermal system, but I do not think it was, I don't think it was as well designed or as well implemented as the one in the library. Well, it's first and second floor now, yes, ma'am, and I think... And I know the intentions were good, but I believe some of the older wall units, the individual wall units that used to handle the system, were, I think some of the older units were kept in place that probably shouldn't have been. A bit more of the system should have been replaced with new materials, because we're having problems now with whole wall units failing and needing to be replaced. And it's kind of expensive to go in after the fact when you've refurbished the entire building and replaced those things. I believe it's 8. And if I'm not mistaken, there's 12 or 16 or something like that at the library. That's a good point, because that was the next thing I was going to raise up. It's probably trying to do the square footage area of that social services building, you can see it's roughly two-thirds the size of the library, but it is also a much older building. The insulation is not as good. It's the windows, the seals around the windows are not as good, and it's just a bit draftier. So all things considered, if you were doing a geothermal system for the social services building, it probably should have been sized about the same as the one for the library, and it is considerably smaller. So it's operating much less efficiently, and therefore more likely to break, and it becomes more expensive to operate.
But this is sort of a snapshot.
This is just a one-year snapshot. But it's possible, except that... Yes. Well, you make an excellent point, but I can tell you right now we're probably looking at another 10,000 just in the next couple of months in the social services building. Now, the courthouse, the recent money that you approved is not included in those repair costs yet, because I simply haven't gotten the invoices. So you're probably looking at about another 25,000 there, and I wouldn't expect a repeat of that. I would expect that the repairs there are of a more permanent nature. There's some stuff that was perhaps left a little too long, but now that it's been replaced, I think we're going to get good service out of that. Well, you know, it's actually not brand new anymore. I mean, it's going on four or five years old, I think, now. But your point is well taken. It's a newer system. It's much newer, and you know, your life expectancy on a HVAC system before you really start having to do major repairs is typically 12 to 15 years, sometimes 20. And the problems with some of the things that we have is that certain components of, say, the social services building, the gymnasium, and even the treasurer's office are going on 30 years old.
Talking about the library, we have those samples. Are they all working order, where it shows how you can produce the solar panels?
Oh yes, sir. They yes, sir. What happens there? And they winterize that so that, because it will freeze in the wintertime, and we had just gotten a little bit behind schedule and hadn't had a chance to go out there and de-winterize them yet, but they should be up and running, and I think it's been about 2 weeks that since they took care of that. So the little display that's out behind is should be fully functional. Well, I'll be honest with you, I've got a couple of fairly pressing issues there. I know the goal of putting the geothermal system in the social services building was to get rid of the giant boiler and also that large cooler unit that are out behind the building. However, unfortunately, those are the only two things that are in place that allow the air during extreme hot weather and extreme cold weather to be preconditioned to a temperature that the geothermal system can operate most efficiently in. I cannot tell you why, but that system design did not include any new items to allow for preconditioning of the air, which is yet another reason why the geothermal operates at a less efficiency. You've got, when that boiler isn't operating like it should, and it's 30 or 40 years old, in the wintertime, you've got very cold air that can come in, and then, of course, the geothermal system is designed to work with air that's between, I think, 35 and 75 or 80 or something like that. So whenever your temperatures are significantly beyond those parameters, you need to either pre-cool it as it comes in or pre-warm it as it comes in, depending upon whether you're trying to operate the AC or the heat. I've been working with our contractor, and it's probably somewhere between $6,000 and $10,000 we're going to put in a hot water heater based preheating unit, and we're going to put in basically a typical straight up, you know, heat pump type AC unit to pre-cool in those, at which point the boiler can be removed and that air handler, the large cooler can be used, and the newer systems are designed for specifically the preheating or pre-cooling of just the incoming air. They're not Whereas the original boilers and the cooling unit were to serve the entire building, so they're operating well out of their efficient zones right now. And I think we can reduce our operating costs there a little bit by putting newer pretreatment stuff in. And since the last round of very expensive repairs a couple months ago, we've been doing reasonably well there at the social services building. So I'm hoping that when we, you know, we get this $8,000 to $10,000 spent on some new equipment, that we'll see a significant reduction in our repair costs next year as well. Total cost of the admin building half make you wonder why we're considering replace, but we still have money budgeted as a CIP project, which you just simply haven't gotten to yet, to completely replace the system in the admin building as well. This I put in here not so much to stand here and go over in this meeting, since there's so much data on it, but this is basically this slide for every building that and facility that we have. We've got a total of about, I think, 28 buildings that the county owns, exclusive of schools, and if you include the two buildings at the Fuzdy, Major Fuzdy Wells, I think it's 28. If you leave them out, it's 26. But this gives you basically the FY13 annual totals, FY12 annual totals, 11 averages, and then the last column is basically a percentage of the total, the county's total electric bills that building represents. The court buildings, for instance, takes up 16% of our overall annual electric bill. Public safety's 8.8, etc. Yes, sir. I apologize. I should have put Fork Union Community Center in front of that. Yes, sir. That's what that is. And as a side note, Mr. Olenbrook, on the engineering for the study, we're in the process next two weeks of interviewing firms for our task order based engineering contracts, and one of those firms will be, one of their first tasks is going to be to start these building evaluations that you've approved.
I think those figures maybe are a little bit skeptical. Bottom, we have MAC at fire stations and all, like 1.6 and 1.33
of the total budget. You really have to look at the rest of it to understand. Just to look at figures,
you think, wow, they're only
1.33%.
So you have to see the whole
story there.
Yeah. You almost want that
number with the square feet. Yes. Well, I have that, if you want to see, which has month by month as well as cost per square foot. And I'll be happy to provide that to anybody that wants to see a copy of it. I just could not think of a good way to get it up there on that screen in a way that you could see.
Well, not unless you're including the bus bays.
No, just that built.
They built the space in the back.
Oh, they built the space in the back?
Yeah,
they all went to the
back wall. MACA is listed here as being almost 4,000 square feet.
Open the weather. And the second floor.
What's in there now?
Yeah, it's all part of the thrift store. They've got a little small office space in there, but for the most part, they've got product in there. Don't have enough data yet on the new fire station to assess whether it's going to be less or more expensive to operate than the old one. We've only got about a month, or I think we're only on our second month. But you can see, I've got everything here. We have a total of 48... electric accounts with two different electric providers, and we pay each of those bills every month. Well, yes, and if you'll see, there's numerous electric connections out at Pleasant Grove, and yeah, when the house comes in, I don't know where I have the house. It should be pretty cheap. It should be down here somewhere. Pleasant Grove, Six Service Ball. Yeah. As we renovate that house, ultimately that cost will go up, probably, you know, closer, at least on a per square foot basis, to one of the other any of the other buildings that we operate. But You can, but like I said, this is it. This is all of it. And anybody that wants the master spreadsheet of this, I'll be happy to give you a copy of it. It'll probably bore you to sleep. But next, we have the Palmyra Area Wastewater Treatment Plant, which I'll come right out and say I don't know how, given the, what's connected to it and the fact that you're kind of paying your, we're paying ourselves when we pay a sewer bill in a large case. I don't see this thing ever operating at a so-called break-even point. However, we can do enough analysis to determine what percentage of private connections are on it and therefore what percentage of the operating money you could potentially get back. But again, a plant that small, unless your rates are excessively high, you're going to have a hard time making your operating. Well, yes, here we go. The last number there is, and this is just an estimate because the data is still, there's so few connections that it's, your data is bound to be at, but we basically, right now, I'll go down here, it's a 39,900 gallon per day plant. Average daily flows when the high school is open right now run around 18,000 gallons per day. The total number of connections, as far as our records go, is 33. And that's physical connections. So there's, some are big, some are small. So, total number of residential houses connected are 17. Non-residential connections, 16, obviously. And then a subcategory of that, private, what I called commercial connections, and I actually included the two churches that are on the system as commercial connections rather than residential because they do have different usage patterns. But then also E.W. Thomas and the barbecue place make up basically the five private commercial connections, and 11 of the connections are the public buildings that are right here in the Palmyra area. And given that, you know, a full third of your connections, well, I say right here in the Palmyra area, it also includes the sheriff's office, the library, and the new school. But given that 11 of your 33 connections are public facilities, which technically when they pay a sewer bill, it's like moving money from one pocket to the other, it does make it kind of an interesting challenge to try to do an economic analysis of this. But basically, it looks like about four, currently of the 18,000 gallons a day when the school is open, 4,000 gallons a day comes from the private connections, 14,000 from the public buildings. We bring in about $4,900 a year from the private connections. Everything else that shows up on the balance sheet for the Immunis is coming in from either the schools, which is about 9,500 or something. I think it was 9,800 last year, if I'm not mistaken. And then, or the bills that are sent to the public works office and the courthouse and whatnot. So, as I said, it's like taking money out of your right pocket, putting it in your left. By my estimate, about the most you're going to get at the current rates at the build-out of this plant from private connections is $25,000 a year. There we go. Okay, no, don't look at the $3 million. That's not an expense. That's actually, this is, it's a little, the operating expenses fluctuate, but you can see they run right around $180,000, $190,000 a year, and they still don't quite cover it, because if you look down that sheet, you'll see we collected, one year we collected about $12,700 in user fees, then it was $8,200. Last year it was about $22,000 because the high school came on. '09, '08. But it's I think now I could be wrong. Barbara can correct me. The $3.2 million total net assets, does that include the gravity sewer line as well as the plant?
Yes.
Okay. So your total net assets that you're looking at are not just the plant. It, I just verified with Barbara that it does include that large gravity sewer line that we constructed up across Pleasant Grove to the high school. So it's a significant amount of infrastructure, but given the fact that most of it runs across public land and you just don't have a lot of private development in this area right now, it's going to be a tough nut to try to make any money off of that plant. We're still paying for it. We pay about, I think it's $60,000 a year on a zero interest note. Barbara, can you help me with that?
2037, I believe.
2037. Yes, ma'am. I would recommend that we not try to pay that one off early because it is zero interest. All right, well.
So the ROI said this was going to make money.
Oh, yeah.
Carol, we didn't have an ROI.
Yeah. Well, I obviously was not here when the plant was built, but I can tell you, based on about 25 years of experience in the water and sewer business, I would never stand up before a public body and tell them expect to make money off of a sewage treatment plant. It's extremely hard to do.
The bad thing about that sewage treatment plant, though, at the time, say what really our understanding was that it could be expanded.
I understand. Yeah, right. And as you get bigger, you do get the economies of scale, and you have a chance of, I wouldn't say making money, because when you're operating a public utility, the deal is to break even on it. And you could potentially do that with a 250,000 gallon per day plant. And my I guess it was 200, but so in that range, that's getting up to the size where with reasonable rates prior to the nutrient and TMDL stuff, you had the potential of being able to have reasonable rates and break even on a 200,000 gallon plant. And the site is laid out up there to have three more of those units that are up there put in parallel and have it be a 200,000 gallon per day plant. But the problem is getting something like that permitted now. And I noted that's permitted capacity because the actual hydraulic and treatment capacity of the unit that's at our treatment plant right now, it is 50,000 gallons a day. It is rated for 50, but because of the keeping it below 40 to avoid the TMDL limits, we had it permitted at 39.9. Total maximum daily loading of nutrients. There's a whole lot of states that are in trouble or having, let's shall we say, discussions with the EPA about the meaning of some of the TMDL regs, and so far Virginia's not been... Well, we've had a couple victories and a couple that didn't go so well. But the bottom line is, I know it's bad news, but I don't see any way that given the operating cost of a facility like this that without having some kind of an extraordinarily high rate or an extraordinary change in circumstance, that we're ever going to really be able to break even on it. So there, I brought the whole room down. Did you have any more questions? And
obviously,
I'm sorry, I forgot to get to that. Okay, down here we got, and this is a little bit of a. I have a letter where somebody promised that we could potentially find 15,000 gallons a day of flows for them to a private developer. It was from my predecessor to them. It remains to be seen whether it's actually any kind of a commitment. But I went ahead and, for the sake of this discussion, assumed that we have about a 15,000 gallon a day commitment, which isn't the end of the world. It just means that you need to encourage them to go ahead and hook up and start using it, which leaves right around 5,000. Possibly a little bit more, maybe as much as 7, that is, quote, unsold or available capacity in the plant. Now, based on what I have heard was going to go in over there on this traffic circle, I want to say Zeiger, but that's a Culpepper name. I think 7,000 would probably cover what he wants to do. So I think even if this commitment thing worked out to be a true commitment, and about that point, you're probably capped out without getting a couple years of data to make sure that you can show that you're, you know, using well below your capacity, and then you might be able to open up a little bit more capacity. Unless somebody knows where there's some really good soils for a massively large drain field.
Questions?
Thanks.
Stevens, I guess we'll move on to the county billing utilities.
We're
all the way down the bottom, okay. High school cost survey and need status.
I just blazed off the goal.
Good afternoon again. This has been on Mr. Nichols' list since the day I got here, and I am glad we are finally getting past. Fluvanna County High School cost summary. So the first question I had to ask is, what are you talking about when you talk about the costs of the new high school? So we've come up basically with four different numbers. Is it the total debt that was issued for the construction of the new high school? Is it the actual expenditures? Is it the budget, what the board approved? Or is it the state numbers? The state does not comparisons to see how much does it cost to build a high school in Virginia. So those are the four different numbers that we researched and will bring to you today. First, we'll talk about the debt that was issued. Between 2006 and 2008, there was $78.4 million in debt issued that was for the purpose of constructing and furnishing and outfitting the new high school. Now, some of that money was put back in the bank for capitalized interest and things like that, but that is all the debt that was originally issued for the new high school. In the bottom of the chart, you'll see that if you were to ask me today how much debt is outstanding for the new high school, the answer would actually be greater. It's now $85.2 million, and that is because of the 2008 refinancing. As you recall, we ended up issuing more debt to save interest money. So if you said today there's $85.2 million in debt that can be attributed to the construction and outfitting of the new high school. And then we can look at actual expenditures. And the bottom line there is $72.8 million. And I want to explain to you where we're at with that, because I know, Mr. Weaver, you've had some questions. Why are we still spending money on the high school? So you'll see total expenditures to date are $71.5 million. There's actually still retainage being held. Two different companies. Nielsen was the primary contractor, and the schools can speak to this more, but there's still been issues with, I believe, the cafeteria floor primarily with tile there. And so we haven't finished paying the final contract to Nielsen, which I believe will be completed this summer.
Right.
But all the original debt proceeds have been spent. What is still remaining in the bank is interest that was earned. And everybody is probably interested in why we are spending the interest on the high school. That's because we have no choice. According to the bond agreements that you sign when you borrow, you debt proceeds include the actual proceeds you get plus any interest that you earn. So any interest that we've earned has to be spent on the project, and the project was building and outfitting the high school. So there still is a remaining bank balance, even once we spend the retainage of $233,000, which Mr. Winkler is using for things like the irrigation system had never been tested until a couple weeks ago, and that was not part of the original contract for them to come out and test, so they had to pay for that. The preparing the fields this spring, still paying for that. Getting computers, and still assessing exactly where he can spend that money, but it does remain to be spent on the new high school, and we're keeping our fingers crossed we can get this all done by the end of the calendar year, because another thing, a condition when you issue tax-exempt money is they don't want it sitting in the bank forever either. They want you to spend it. So in the end, what we will actually spend, including what's still remaining, is $72.8 million. What did the these are the different actions that the board approved, different moving money. Sometimes they amended the budget to used on other things, like the $5.6 million was taken away from the new high school budget because it was put in capitalized interest. Total budget, $72.8 million. And this, I'm just putting in here because if you look at the State of Virginia website, or the VDOE website, and you want to compare our high school to one built in Arlington or, you know, Southwest Virginia, they are going to try to do an apples-to-apples comparison, and they are only going to include construction and site development. So they don't look at how much you put in for desks and furniture and computers, because they're trying to say, you know, does it cost more to build a high school in Northern Virginia? They want to look at a square foot price of constructing a high school. So they use the number 56.8, which relates more to our construction contract than the total outfitting of the high school. When you look at their lists, the highest we ranked was 8th in the state for the cost of a new high school, and it was based on per pupil cost.
Over a period of time?
From 2004 to 2013.
Oh, okay. This is the chart that's available for you. Maybe it's smaller. Theoretically, you could run along the top here. So if you wanted to say who's the largest capacity of schools that high schools that are built during that time, you could just sort by it, and the largest and smallest. Well, we're way down here. If you go on the total building cost and sort of largest and smallest, you know, we're in 13th position. If you go on total square footage, hardly at the top. If you go on square foot per pupil, we're third in line. But this is the data from the state. But again, it's based on a little different criteria than the whole cost of the whole product.
Right.
And so everybody's got their own dollars they like to use to sell their part of the argument. These are just facts that you can look at facts in logical ways, I guess.
What amazed me on this was that the Earth Movement, $12 million. I thought that was unbelievable that we put that much money into that to get the ground right and all of that. I mean, you could have bought 12 different building sites for that, and yet we put that much money. I thought it was like a couple $1 million, but I guess it was this one or one that I saw earlier. $12 million.
The debt issuance slide?
The debt issuance slides.
Right there. So, effectively, we spent $85.2 million to build a $72.8
million high school. Well, if you start, first of all, with the 78, about five of that of debt that was issued went initially to a capitalized interest account. So that's how you get to the 73. To get to the 85, a lot of that is because you still have $9 million out on the original 2008, and now the remainder is 66 because of the refinancing. So that's why I put that in there, because someone would say, how much do we have out today? And yes, today we have 85.2 out today.
Very expensive lessons learned.
But on that, in order to extend that first payment, we went 2 years, didn't we, with interest, and we only paid interest for 2 years.
Well, on the original 2008?
Yes.
Yes, I think it was 2 or 3 years of capitalized interest.
2 years. It could be three.
It could be three.
But it withheld the principal.
Correct. Correct. They structured it so they didn't have to pay principal.
And right. I think that, what was that, $3 million, $4 million, something like that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You took out a credit card to pay down another credit card.
Yes.
Right.
That's exactly what it was.
It was structured to have low payments in the beginning.
Yes. Remember that one, Dad?
There were also questions about the LEED certification. The cost to become LEED certified was $262,500. And it lists some of what the features were there that that included. It's supposed to turn into a savings, but how do we say how much you saved unless you have...
Yes.
Probably didn't. Doctors could have done that yourself without having to be certified to LEED. Yes. Yes. Certification. Do these yourself and not have to pay $262,000.
That I can't answer.
Lessons learned.
This is according to the architects. This is what it took to put the features in that would be required to be LEED certified.
Yeah, that's not a cost to pay somebody to get a certificate. It's the cost to do that.
It's the cost to put those features in, right?
Single pay cost to get those features in, so then you become LEED certified because you put those kind of features in the building.
To add reflective roofing, or...
Yeah, I'm
shot me into the
room.
At 347, I had a suggestion on this.
That would be page 9, is that anything in the four page 9?
Well, I was kind of wondering on page 1 about the, under the board supervisors, professional services for $3,500 and professional services for another $1,300. I'm just kind of wondering if those things
were. Yeah, part filet, which I would imagine be in relation to a legal matter.
That one is specifically for that.
And
the one on AGFS.
AGFS.
Is that our annual payment, Larry, do you know? This is weird.
Oh, it is because we have to pay document fees and record fees.
So back to, is there anything before that or after that? Okay. Number 347, landscape.
They have, instead of buying Roundup, which is the highest price, you can get off brand and save about 25%. And I did notice that you had probably $190, because you can always get off brand. That's what I
did. What did you
do? I did a
few dollars. So
you can get off brand.
To be 2,000.
Yeah.
That's the Commonwealth Attorney rent.
He reduced our rent.
Do we get another bill? Do we need to amend the motion with the initial 1980?
Yeah, it probably will because it'll affect the math.
$1,980 in addition to that is a $2,000 bill for that rent. No,
extension, and I have a feeling that it's for field trips that they took. Yeah, I don't know why it says office supplies.
Oh, well. Every time you put in 2 or 3 minutes to see, you're ready. Obviously, you are.
I'm ready to make a motion.
Mr. Weaver, would you like to move it in the consent agenda?
Yes.
Is there a second?
Go ahead. Mr. Chairman.
It's in the consent agenda, so if
you
can consent agenda, seconded by Mr. Chesser. Any further conversation? All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. Passes 5-0. We have any items of unfinished business for the board? Hearing none, we have any items to do business for the board? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move to our second round of public comment. Again, please remember to keep your comments relative to the board on topic within 5 minutes.
My name is Jack Rook, and I live at the lake. I found something very distressing sitting here today. You have hired Mr. Nichols, who appears to be a very able gentleman. You have hired staff. They looked into the Aqua Virginia, which would appear very carefully. Well, They had meetings with Aqua Virginia. They worked on it. And they came up to the conclusion that it was not a good agreement. You also hire a county attorney who I assume gets paid. And he came up with the fact that this was not a good agreement. Now, I'm all for public coming up and talking, but they know a lot more, apparently, than you do, and presumably than the public knows. So why would they come up with some arguments that say that this is a good agreement? Are they going to go over the agreement? Are they going to get a lawyer to check this agreement? I mean, you have hired staff here who appears extremely able, works hard, and you completely ignore their suggestion. To me, it's unbelievable. Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to address the board? Mr. Sullivan.
Bill Sullivan, 38 Riverside Drive. I want to first state a couple things. I think one, I commend the board for doing the homework and having conversations with Mrs. Keller and the school board and understanding the needs for where the shortfall came for the state funding. So that's great. I think also I'm aligned with what Mr. Kenny was saying around the county needs to move forward for economic development. This county needs to find a way to rebalance our tax base. We need to find a way to get water into critical areas so we can move forward and have great prosperous opportunities to move forward. I completely am aligned with you, and I support your energy and your passion for that. I think I'll stop there for a second, though. And there is a however. And the however is, I think if the board had come out forward and said, let's have a public hearing on water, or let's have a public hearing on economic development, or let's have a public hearing so we can talk about what our vision is and what the answers are, I think that's a great discussion. However, we have, as mentioned by the previous speaker, it's clear that there are great concerns on the viability of the proposal in place. It's been defined and classified as an illegal proposal that we can't move forward with as is, and it sounds like they're not willing to negotiate or move or change that. And I think that's irresponsible on the behalf of this government to try to put something into the public hearing on something that we can't even approve and that we can't move forward with. So I think my recommendation and what I hope the community wants is help provide clear facts around what's possible, what can be done, what are our options, and how do we move forward, as opposed to bringing a proposal to public hearing that you haven't seen because the updated proposal hasn't been put in place, the updated return on investment hasn't been released yet because they're still being finalized by the county administrator. So let's move things forward to public hearing when we actually have all the facts and we have information available, which sounds like it's going to be in another week or two. And it just seems irresponsible putting something forward that people who are paid to do this and who have all the information available to them are actually making recommendations. And I'm actually floored that it was a 5-0 vote. I was expecting it to be 3-0, but I am surprised that all five members decided to move forward and put to public hearing something that's not even legal. And it's just disappointing. And to be honest, this is actually probably the biggest surprise I've seen in the last couple of years in terms of decisions made by this board. So I just wanted to voice that disappointment. But thank you on the other items.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Anyone else wishing to address the board?
What happens when you, at 48, decide to go play basketball with kids? Then you limp for the next week. One quick thing I wanted to throw out at you. Every time you've talked about the DOC with the water, we talked about 75,000 gallons. And yes, they have a permit for 75,000 gallons. Please look back. You'll have better access to this than I do. Make sure that they have had 75 gallons of water continuously. I think that a couple years back, they had to ship water or truck water in just to keep their pond filled enough so that they could adequately serve the corrections facility. The second thing is, when we talk about doing the water and doing it right, please remember, we're going to have to serve this whole county. And we've talked about that a lot, serving Fort Kenyon. I heard you talking about getting that corrected. The school systems. Guys, water is going to become very valuable around this world. And it's not going to be very long before that happens. we have access to 5 million gallons. Let's think about that before we give that away. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Anyone else wish to address the board? Mr. Holder?
Dennis Holder, Kent Store. First, I wanted to second, I guess, what Mr. Rook and Mr. Sullivan had to say. Strikes me that having this public hearing is unreasonable, but maybe for slightly different reasons than they mentioned. Those reasons have to do with the transparency, with what the public knows. Mr. Nichols mentioned that there are 150 documents in that packet that we're supposed to look at, we the public, so that we can know what's going on and comment intelligently, and we have only a few weeks to do that. I suggest that the public can't possibly review, digest, understand, and intelligently comment on 150 documents in the time that you have available. I think it's unreasonable to move forward at that pace right now. The thing that I'm most interested in though, is the report about the cost of the high school. We've been having numbers about that for such a long time that I'm glad we finally have arrived at something that may be fairly close to accurate. I'm concerned, though, about some costs that I didn't see in that report. Partly, I may not have seen them because it wasn't a report in detail. It was a summary. And when I look at the detail, I may find some of the things I'm talking about. But I suspect that that report doesn't include the $300,000 or thereabouts that the county wasted by going to New York and getting a credit rating that we didn't need to do the financing that we did on the high school. I suspect that it doesn't include the $750,000 that the Board of Supervisors had to approve because our contractor and the people who approved the contract didn't consider Davis-Bacon costs when they did that contract. Now, I've never understood that. I mean, Davis-Bacon has only been in place since about 1932. How is it that we managed to completely ignore that requirement of federal law when we let that contract? I wonder whether the low bidder would have been different had the $750,000 for Davis-Bacon costs been in that contract in those competitive bids. I don't know, but I've always wondered that. I've also always wondered where that money really went. Bringing in a cost that should have been in the contract in the first place and then having to approve it and allocated afterwards creates a lot of opportunity for money to be diverted a bit. I don't know that there's anything could be done about that or even if we have a way to know that. But it's always been strange that we ignored a federal law that had been in place such a long time, was so fundamental to letting a contract for a public project like high school. Where did it go? Anyway, I suspect the $750,000 isn't in the summary that we just saw. I suspect there are some other items that aren't too, but those two that I just mentioned are the ones that concerned me, and I hope we'll perhaps look at those more carefully. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Anyone else wish to address the board? Thank
you. Elizabeth Franklin, Columbia District. I would like to comment on the decision regarding the PPEA public hearing. Our county attorney said that he had three constitutional concerns about the agreement that you proposed that we have a public hearing on. He said that he would not approve this agreement unless you ordered him to. Our county administrator gave several reasons, three or four reasons, why he would recommend this after a thorough review by staff. I find this a rush to put the taxpayers at risk by having a public hearing on this very agreement that cannot be changed between now and then. It seems a waste of our time and yours for us to be able to pour through 100-some documents, marshal our arguments against it for something that our attorney has already said he would not approve unless you order him to. and in which our county administrator has said he has great concerns concerning excessive costs and concerning the legalities. It seems like a rush to risk, and it seems like an unfathomable decision on your part. To reiterate Mr. Holder's point, you have had a year to consider this. You've had a year to work through the issues. And yes, there are those of us who've sat out here and worked through them with you. But my goodness, that we are supposed to get up to speed on this and to be able to make informed comment in a matter of a month, I don't think that makes any sense. We have not even seen the second ROI yet that has been working since the beginning of the year. I consider this an irresponsible decision, and it is not fair to the people. Thank you.
Ms. Franklin, is there anyone else wishing to address the board?
Sure.
You're the only one left,
I mean. Well, I can't miss the opportunity to share my passion with another Irishman.
Tony O'Brien, Ravana District. I'll be brief. I mean, I think that everybody has said that there are some serious issues with the idea of the public comments as they currently stand. However, I do think that the passion behind moving forward with economic development is something that we do need to foster and bring forward, and that we need to, as Mr. Nichols said, we do need to take seriously as a county that we have to make some investments. Just in the same way that Mr. Kenny said, that if we don't make those investments, we're passing on a river of money. There was a lot of shared ideas and thoughts, and there was definitely a sense that the community is coming together around water. If we're going to go forward with public comments, maybe they need to be redefined on how they're doing that. But I would certainly hope that we get more information just beyond the aqua plan. It would be great to be able to see, and perhaps it's in the documentation that will be presented, that's going to be my summer reading, the various different plans, the timelines for those plans, the opportunity costs that are lost when those plans aren't enacted, the potential of different interest rate scenarios on those. Those things would help us to make a comprehensive decision that at least starts us moving forward in the right direction. And we have a lot of headwinds against us. We have state funding cuts, federal funding cuts. We have environmental challenges that we're going to face. And as we pass time, 15, 40 years, to Mr. Kenny's point, we lose those opportunities. And we will see the continued pressures for, I think, residential development as commercial folks decide, hey, we're giving up. Levant is not open for business. And those residential developments will add more pressure to the already strained tax base. And we won't have the opportunity to capture that area again for many, many years to come. So focusing on Zion's Crossroad, focusing on water should be this county's priority. And at least to that point, I think that some progress was made today and that the dialogue should continue. In the particular form that it's in, I do see there are some problems there, but those have already been mentioned. So it's nice to agree with you, and it's nice to agree with you, Mr. Weaver, for a change. And thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver. I think we've run out of people with budget
first. I'd like to make a comment here. Because
Mr. Weaver.
I think people have got a very, very valid point. When you're violating constitutional law. And I sort of feel bad sitting here, but my overriding feeling is that we get complaints that you're not allowed to speak to these issues. What you have here tonight probably maybe will only be half of what we're going to have at the next meeting. Shouldn't they see how you come to decisions? Can't they see why you may vote against it? I'm not about to vote for something that Mr. Payne says is unconstitutional. I won't approve it. But I'm going to approve it to allow people to have their say. And I think they need to see this whole process. And that's a complaint we've had for years. So that's my point for taking it. And I think your point is very valid. You should even continue. But what is more important? To listen to the people? And to see why maybe I voted against it, or just leave it to settle. And I contend that I want all of you to hear the reasons for this. And I feel bad because I think the points Mr. Solomon and some of the rest that he made are really very valid points, and I concur with you. I concur with you that way. But I will write it for your opinions to give to this board, and let the public have some input and see why we don't.
And just to dovetail on that, I think the public hearing process is supposed to be for that reason, to hear the public. If we had gone 5-0 the other direction, we just say, you know what, we just don't want water and shut it all down. The conversation from the public would have been then, what did you just decide not to do? Why didn't we see any of the information? How come we didn't get a chance to go ahead and talk about that? So I concur with you, Fox. I think this is why the public hearing process exists. It's to hear the public, put the information front and center, and to get the best option. Because certainly the 5-0 can have all the all of the perspectives that sometimes we like. So
we might have to do a whole lot of reading too.
Mr. Chairman,
if I may, just since there's still some public lunch here, let me just explain one thing quick. Yes, there's 150 documents, maybe 200, maybe 119. I'm not sure, I just know there's a lot of documents because we work really hard. What will be most germane, though, is that the last folder there has the final agreements in them with staff comments and annotations. That's really what needs to be looked at. You can go back and look at all the iterations that they've changed substantively and gone from one version to another version to another version. But what we're talking about truly is this last directory, and I'll update that so it says no aqua revision final or whatever. So it looks like that. I just am not allowed to not to restrict the other working papers, so that's why I've got all involved. So truly, it's a smaller subset. And all the covered documents are 28 or 29 pages long.
They're not
in teeny
tiny
little
kind of
thing.
You can go back and use them as references.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be
available for questions. And one thing that I think the public does need to know is that the statute is written the way it's written so that there can be transparency.
Correct.
That all of the documentation that goes into formulating Mr. Nichols' recommendation, all of that information is there for the public view. So I think Mr. Nichols is right. Most of that information is not going to be terribly likely, but it's there if you want to see it, and to some extent you may need to see it.
Great. Any further comments from the board? Hearing none, I'm going to motion to
somebody.
Is there a second? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Passes 5-0.